Item number 13, recreational caught salmon from Canada, briefing and a public hearing. Are they 33% smaller than the fish caught in the U.S.? That's a currency joke, gentlemen.
No, I get it.
Now you get it? Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
I was waiting for the rib shot.
Yeah, no, that was it. And they all carry little buckets of milk with them when they can.
It's steel.
Well, good morning. Chair Smith, members of the commission, Director Storr, Deputy Director Windrup. For the record, my name is Kurt Hughes. As was mentioned in the introduction, I'll be providing a briefing today on the possession and delivery of Canadian caught salmon into Washington ports. This is a briefing with opportunity for public hearing. So, again, there you have it. The intent is to provide a description of what we're intending here to you and the members of the public with the intent of seeking rulemaking action and public testimony today. So the presentation will go through a similar outline to your summary sheet with the background, the need for the rulemaking, the fiscal implications, our public involvement to date, and then staff recommendations. So this is associated with Rule Washington Administrative Code 220, 310, 210, which requires a vessel operator to have a valid Canadian Customs clearance number to deliver salmon legally harvested in Canada into a Washington port. So this is the rule that's currently in place. In June of 2017, the Canadian Parliament amended their Customs Act to no longer require certain U.S. boaters to report to Canadian Customs on the day of their trip into Canada. And the clearance number that was provided is no longer available as an outcome of their change in the law if you're not making a landing into Canada or otherwise contacting another vessel. So the background, as we understand it from Canadian Customs, is that this was something that was burdensome to their process, and therefore, primarily in the Great Lakes, they were handing out thousands of these during a summer boating. So this liberalizes the activities of recreating through vessel traffic from a U.S. port into Canadian waters and back. So, again, that customs number, that clearance number is no longer available. So the need for the rulemaking is to allow anglers that are going into Canada to fish with a valid Canadian license to return to a Washington port with legally caught salmon. This is a pretty simple process where we're asking anglers to go onto the WDFW website, complete a brief form, and then they'll receive with that confirmation email that has a number in it that effectively takes the place of that Canadian clearance number. So the fiscal implications, it's in terms of the cost to the public, it's the amount of time that it takes to go online to do that form. Typically, when I've done it by a phone call with someone who doesn't have access to the internet, the total length of the phone call is typically 2 to 3 minutes, and completing the form takes about a minute or less. So the historic pattern would have been for someone to call Canadian Customs either via VHF radio or cell phone. So the timing is pretty much the same. The cost of the department, again, while we've updated or created a page on our web page, that piece is done. We did implement this through emergency rule last August, so we've had some experience with it. We have had quite a number of calls initially with concern, but only a handful of calls that needed some assistance in completing the form since the initial rollout. And I think the volume of calls as we went from August into September waned significantly, as does the fishery during that time frame. The rule that we did enact through emergency order in August of 2017 has expired, and anglers that are intending to cross the border to fish in Canada continue to use this online form, even without a legal requirement. So what we've learned to date through that public involvement in enforcement, as well as fish program staff, largely Deputy Chief Mike Cincy when he was still with the department, our folks up on the Strait of Juan de Fuca under Captain Chadwick, have had a lot of contact with constituents, lots of conversations explaining, you know, the intent and the purpose and the need for the rule. Again, as I mentioned, we did implement it last year during the salmon fishery when our fishery closed to the taking of a Chinook, and still Canadian rules allowed harvest of Chinook under their licensing in Canadian waters. So this is something that we've spent a fair bit of time discussing with our Puget Sound Advisory Group, as well as the public. And I think that where we've landed on this in those conversations is at a pretty good place. The online reporting aspect is pretty straightforward. And again, those rare occasions when there's a lack of access to the internet, which is oftentimes provided through some of these ports in CQ with our partners in those local communities along the Strait of Juan de Fuca and up into the San Juan Islands, there's ample access being provided. So we think the single online reporting is sufficient. So next steps, again, today's our briefing with a public hearing. We're certainly looking for input from the commission and the public to ensure that we have this right if it does go forward. And then final action would be taken during your July commission conference call. So with that, questions, comments, please.
Mr. McKenzie. Mr. Vice Chairman, so you've described the need relative to the Canadian customs connection. I wonder if you could describe again for us the original need of why someone would need to do this. It seems like it's an enforcement activity. Maybe it has to do with salmon. I mean, maybe it's an enforcement thing with regard to people maybe catching salmon in United States water and claiming they were caught in Canadian water. Or maybe it's a catch accounting thing to make sure that salmon caught in Canada get counted on the Canadian share and not on the U.S. share. But anyway, could you go back to why this whole program was why this kind of thing is originally needed?
Absolutely. Thank you, Commissioner McIsaac. So as you alluded to, there is an enforcement aspect to this. Absolutely. The genesis of this, I think, began in part with enforcement. At the time, back in the late 90s, Canadian coho, Thompson River coho, were just coming into an era of concern, conservation concern. So we were starting to put some restrictions in place relative to the Pacific Salmon Treaty to ensure that we were achieving our conservation objectives. The second aspect, as you commented on, is one for catch accounting. We have folks leaving our ports that are fishing in our port, or sorry, in our waters under our regulations, which have certain, in some cases, quotas that we're managing to Canadian fisheries, as U.S. fisheries managed by this Department of Fish and Wildlife are developed annually relative to forecasts of abundance and intended to achieve certain conservation objectives that exist under the co-manager's escapement goals, the Federal Endangered Species Act, exploitation rates and such, as well as those related to the Pacific Salmon Treaty. And as we develop those, we're looking to sort of past patterns of fisheries and exploitation through our FRAM, Fishery Regulatory and Assessment Model, to develop those seasons to ensure that we're achieving conservation goals and that our anticipated annual impacts are based on those sort of recent patterns of fisheries. So we develop all of those things with an intent. Our regulations do and often differ dramatically from Canadian regulations, where we're maybe closed for one particular species, be it Chinook or Coho, open for mark selective or maybe even non-selective, and Canadian fisheries have something different in play. So there is a set of need that's based both in an enforcement aspect as well as in ensuring that there's catch accounting and fishery management needs that are being met.
You have a follow-up? I got it. Okay. Right. I got a couple of points or questions. There's a couple that I'm just a little bit concerned about, and we got some time to work them out. Is the rule any different for a fisherman or boater that trailers across the border and goes through Blaine Customs, or runs on the bottom of his boat from a Washington port to a Canadian port? I'll give you all the questions first. Is there any difference there? And I'm thinking about the larger boats that go to Canada and spend a month or more on their boats, how that's going to work, the dates. They may not have access to a computer. That's one of the, and then the last one is more of a clarification issue. And, you know, I was in the business of boats retailing for many, many years, and I had a lot of questions. And it has to do with the term landing. We need to clarify for a boater slash fisherman what a landing is. There for a while, a landing was you couldn't fish in Canada because once you're put your line in the water, that was a landing. And then it was, in addition to that, you couldn't anchor because once you anchored somewhere, that was a landing. And then it add to that, if you were going shrimping or crabbing and you dropped your pot on the bottom, that was a landing. And then the other one, of course, is if you pull into a port to get fuel, I would think that could be a reasonable cause to call that a landing. But I think we need to, if we're going to do this, clarify it so we answer as many of those unusual questions as we possibly can.
Thank you, Commissioner Carpenter. Some very good questions. I think certainly better answered by enforcement, but I'll take a crack at it. With regard to the trailering versus motoring, I don't believe that this rule clarifies between those two. I think that would be a good clarification, that if you're transiting via a land port, that would be something separate. So that's probably a good clarification to have. I think that in the example of a larger vessel spending more than one day in Canadian waters, I think that's something that we've talked about with enforcement folks. In that situation, it would seem as though you're likely to make some sort of landfall, be it anchored up in a cove on Sook or around the corner in Nootka. Those seem to be more of you're going to have a clearance, you're going to have made that contact. So that clearance number that would be provided through the existing Canadian Customs that still requires when you make landfall to have that, I think that does sort of interplay with this and provides you with the same outcome. So there may need to be some revision of how we put the rule in place through emergency, the language in the emergency rule that clarifies that as well. With regard to the actual definition of landing, certainly the idea that you're going in close enough to shore on the Canadian side to drop a hook, drop an anchor, would put you likely in a situation where there's probably going to be some clearance of customs that would tend to occur. I'm not entirely sure how Canada would view that. Similarly, the placement of pots for purposes of catching shrimp or crab isn't something that's addressed in this change of the rule. I know that rockfish and halibut are addressed in parts of this rule, and those remain unchanged. I think shrimp may be included in that as well, and that remains unchanged. The specifics of this is if you're planning to fish for salmon, then we're requesting that you get this clearance or this email online form completed, and in doing so, we're really targeting those day trips, those that are leaving from one of those ports on the Strait of Juan de Fuca or out of the San Juan Islands. And so one of the things that we've seen in the reporting is some reports that have come in that are for many, many days, maybe even a month. And we don't see those as being the day trips that we're looking for in trying to ensure that we have this clearance number that provides people with the legal authorization to return to Washington ports with Canadian
customs. I think that's a good explanation. I raise those because they're going to come up at some point, and if you can clarify through some dialogue with enforcement. The other one I was just sitting here thinking about is there are lots of boats that leave Puget Sound and go to Southeast Alaska, and they don't stop in Canada on the way up, but they might stop and fish on the way back. So just, you got your arms around it. I think we can work it out. So I just wanted to share that, Kurt.
No, I really appreciate it, Commissioner Carpenter. Those are great insights and things that we'll work with enforcement when we bring a draft rule, if that's what we're asked to do in July.
Yes.
Hi, Kurt.
Good morning.
Another is, for many years,
we used to fly up to Canada to fish quite frequently, and so if there's clarification about how that process takes place, we would have to clear customs in the airplane, and then when we got back, of course, too, we'd have to report into U.S. Customs. But in terms of having, you know, the number that allowed us to bring Canadian fish in, you know, I don't know where that's at. But also, you mentioned this is available on the website. Is that available now, or is it?
Yeah.
Because I don't know. I've got the website in front of me, and I couldn't find it.
Yeah, so I think the same issue is at play with regard to trailering via a land port into Canada, land crossing, as with aviation. You will receive, you wouldn't necessarily receive a clearance number, but you would have cleared customs, and so it would be verifiable pretty easily. Doesn't apply in this instant, but we'll want to clarify that. So thank you for that. The form is currently up online. We have, as recently as I checked earlier in the week, still been receiving regular input to that form. And I will admit, it's not the easiest thing to find. So I anticipate as we go forward, if this becomes a permanent rule, then we would want to ensure that that is made more visible.
Is it under enforcement or under fishing, yeah, right, saltwater?
Believe it or not, it's under licensing.
Yeah.
So if you type in the search bar, Canadian or Salmon Canada, it usually pops up as one of the top lines. But yeah, it's something that not the easiest to find. And I'm not sure what happened with that. But it was linked to our news release when that went out back in August, and I think folks that are they're still using it are those who were primarily users when it first went live. And the reason I believe that it was linked to licensing is because that portion of the website's more secure than some of the other more public places on the agency's webpage, and we wanted to ensure that any information that was provided from the public was secure. And we tried to reduce the information, personal information, such that we didn't have any concerns with somebody's personal information being obtained unlawfully.
Yeah, I see it's required you give your wild ID number, so I can understand that. So, yeah, and doing that search did locate it. That's something that we're working on now is our website.
Yes.
More reasonable to navigate. You know, I share the frustration of a lot of the public when I go to the department website and I cannot find what I'm looking for.
Yeah, I was surprised. It was easy to find when I was contacted in the fall when it was related to the web or the news release. But more recently, it is more of a challenge to find. Well, certainly, if this becomes permanent in your rulemaking, then we would want to make that easier to find. And it doesn't require the wild ID. Not everyone fishing in Canada is going to have a wild ID. So that is an option that makes it very easy as a user to plug that in, and it populates your information. So it's an option within the form.
Okay. You know, just as a suggestion, as we get into this period of high activity, it's not difficult to have that form available through multiple locations where it just hyperlinks. And believe me, I'm not a web expert, but I know that you could have this available in other places on the website to make it easier to access. And when they click it, it just winds up where they want to be.
Completely agree. It should be more visible on the fisheries page.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. Follow up on your day trip example. So hypothetically, if someone's in a boat out of Roach Harbor and they got a boatload of kids and everybody's got a Canadian license and a United States license, and the weather's fine, the water's flat, and they want to go over to the Canadian side and fish because it's closed United States waters and it's open. And in an impromptu situation like that, how would this email notification work? Is there something you can do on your cell phone to make that happen, or would that kind of impromptu decision not be allowed?
It's not disallowed from a geographic base by any question. So if you wanted to be somewhat more deviant, cross into Canadian waters, or decide you're going to fish while you're in U.S. waters and you see enforcement coming, you could probably do it on your phone. I don't know that you could do it that quickly, but it would certainly have a time stamp on it. In the legal intent aspect that you mentioned, you can certainly bring it up on your smartphone and log on to the forum. It's not the same restriction as the wildlife recovery from a, you know, motor vehicle impact, you know, that salvage piece that we have that requires the actual computer to use. You can use it from your cell phone, do the application online, the email would come to your email. Conveniently, the information is transmitted via blind copy to agency email alias that our enforcement officers have access to. And so you as the individual would have access on your email, and enforcement also has access to that information through that agency email alias as well.
So then, just to be clear, not as a gaming the system thing, but a genuine, spontaneous decision that's entirely legitimate, that could be accomplished under this proposal.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you. No, there's no public comment on this one.